Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. I'm Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Marshall Klarfeld, who is the author of Adam, the Missing Link, the new History of Mankind's Creation. Marshall had an interesting education at Caltech, where he was educated by a number of Nobel laureates, who we'll talk about in a little bit. And then he became interested in some of the advanced scientific knowledge found in the Bible story of creation, and actually started to research that. Came upon a number of different information sources that many of us have read about, including Zacharias Stitchin's books, and put together some very interesting evidence to support the idea that the story of Adam, as related in the Bible, may not be exactly what we're taught in Bible school. So welcome, Marshall. I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you, Dr. Susan. It's a pleasure to talk to you and your audience about a subject that I'm very, very interested in.
Yes, it's a fascinating subject, and one that I've been reading about for many years, and I believe that your book puts together an incredible amount of evidence in many different scientific fields of endeavor. So I guess we could start at the beginning, how your interest in this subject came about, and what led you on your worldwide search for this evidence.
Well, thank you. I was a student at Caltech, as you mentioned, and during my understudies, I also was a student of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that my curiosity was piqued by was, how did Noah get all those animals on that boat?
Right. Good question.
Good question. And how did God create man out of the dust of the earth in his image? These
right.
were questions that a young undergraduate constantly questions, and as I grew to understand things, I was able to put together later in my life answers.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have, as you mentioned, an excellent opportunity, and I didn't realize it at the time, that these two professors I had were future Nobel laureates. My chemistry professor was Linus Pauling, and my physics professor was Richard Feynman. And at one point, I think I was 20 years old, Susan, and I asked Dr. Pauling if he believed in God, because that was a question that really perplexed me.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me a very, very good answer, which I reproduced in my book, Adam, the Missing Link, and I can tell your audience right now the answer so that they can grasp where I was coming from. Dr. Pauling said to me, "Klarfeld, our discipline is to explain everything that's going on in the universe back to the beginning of time, which was the Big Bang. If you were to ask me what there was a millisecond before the Big Bang, we don't know. You want to believe in God, please do, because we don't have the answer of what there was just before the universe was created." Now, that answer stuck with me all these years, and I quoted him in my book because I felt people should ponder that question. We've grown up as a civilization and advanced tremendously in the short period of evolutionary time. The first skeletal remains of our species, Homo sapiens, were found in Southeast Africa and dated to 250,000 years ago, which is nothing in the evolutionary scale of things. And my question was, most species take millions of years to evolve and change. So the species just before us was Homo erectus. They came out of Africa and populated the entire landmass of the planet Earth. Took them 1,800,000 years to do that, but their evolutionary advancement got them only to throwing spears and making stone tools, 1,800,000 years. Now, here we arrive in Southeast Africa 250,000 years ago, and we're walking on the moon. Now, that really struck me as a perplexing question, is how that happened.
Yes, and anybody who's studied the subject knows that there's something called the missing link, because there, as you point out in your book, there's genetics that just don't exist on the planet Earth from the leap between the Erectus and our species.
Yes, right. Now, as I got into Sitchin's books and I studied every one of them, I came to the realization that there was an entire history of humans before the Bible. The Bible gives us the history of mankind from, say, 5,800 years ago. In my book, I've reproduced a window into mankind's history that goes back 450,000 years. There is a recorded history on what's called cuneiform tablets, which come from the first civilization, which was the Sumerians.
Right.
And they learned to write, and they put a lot of things down on these 300,000 tablets that we've found so far that give us a huge insight into what was going on prior to the Bible.
Have you read God's Genes and Consciousness by Paul von Lord?
No, I have not.
It's a book you need to read. I interviewed him, I don't know, probably 5 years ago on that book. And much of Paul's work is based, well, many of the conclusions and details are very similar to what is in your book, but his is not based on scientific findings like yours are. His is based more on information put together through different sources, many of them probably very accurate, but not based on the kind of scientific information that's in your book.
Well, I think that the voluminous record that the Sumerians left us on these cuneiform tablets, which I explain in the book how they were found and how the translations came to be, gives us this window into what was going on. And it apparently, in my book, I report that there was a time when humans cohabited with extraterrestrials.
Right.
Now, these extraterrestrials were called, they called themselves the Anunnaki.
Right.
And they came from a planet which is orbiting in our solar system. It's, they call their planet Nibiru. It orbits our sun every 3,600 years. But their civilization apparently was a million years advanced over Homo sapiens. In fact, there are some amazing evidence of the fact that they may truly have created us in their image.
Well, it seems that the evidence points toward that, and especially there is a lot of evidence in the Quran, actually more evidence in the Quran than in the Bible. The Bible has some evidence, but I actually read the Quran.
Yes.
Looking for the evidence, and it's there is a lot of evidence in the Quran that that mankind was created.
Yes.
In their image. In the,
right. Now, there's the Sumerians, besides leaving us the cuneiform tablets, which is the written stories that they told, they left us a product called the cylinder seals.
Right.
And the cylinder seals are images which we can see pictures of what was going on, and they were very cleverly fabricated. They're made out of a very hard substance called hematite, the stone.
Right, yeah.
And hematite is as strong as steel in the hardness scale of things. Mm-hmm. And engraved on these tiny one-inch-tall cylinders, polished surface, are negative images. When you roll them on wet clay, you get a positive picture story.
Mm-hmm.
And in some of these, you see images of what the Anunnaki portrayed themselves as, because I am convinced that there was no ability by the early Sumerians to create these cylinder seals. These cylinder seals are so precise and so perfect and so difficult to produce that only an advanced civilization could have made them. The Sumerians certainly couldn't have carved in steel.
I just wanted to inject here for our listening audience that the Sumerian civilization, within a period of 5,000 years, went from barely able being able to do anything to having a complex, mathematics, evidence of off-planet knowledge of our solar system, language.
Have.
You know, just. You can't do that in 5,000 years.
No, no, you don't. It just doesn't happen, anthropology. And they admitted that everything they had, they got from the Anunnaki.
Exactly. So, you know, now we have an explanation of how they can do that.
Sure. And I think that if, and I tried to show it in my book, that the Adam the Missing Link is a chronicle of all the evidence, the physical evidence that's
right.
here on the planet Earth that couldn't have been done by the local populations. It's just impossible
right.
that the Egyptians built the pyramids and that the tribes on the Salisbury Plain built the Stonehenge and that the folks in Lebanon, Baalbek, Lebanon, lifted those humongous stones up on that platform. The cuneiform tablets tell us they use that as their spaceport, their landing platform.
Right.
So that I'm kind of a reporter, Dr. Susan. I'm a researcher, but in my book, I'm reporting what I found and how I put it together. And I encourage people to read for themselves and make their own judgments. I don't tell them what to think. I tell them this is the evidence that I found, and any intelligent person, it would be hard for them to deny what this evidence shows.
Yeah, I just want to inject here something that I was just reading a few hours ago. I'd read your book earlier in the week, because we had a snowstorm here, so we were locked in the house for about 48 hours. But I was just reading a book called The Secret History of Extraterrestrials, and in it is a theory that's very interesting that might let our listeners know how important Iraq is in that area. Iraq is the original, supposedly the original Garden of Eden area, and there's
between the Tigris and Euphrates River.
Exactly.
And then
basically, it's the home of all of these, what we're talking about now, all the Sumerian civilization, where the cuneiform tablets were found, and all this information that's in your book. And then the question comes up of why did we invade Iraq out of kind of dubious, weapons of mass destruction, that kind of thing. Well, The Secret History of Extraterrestrials, which is written by Lynn Kasten, puts forth evidence that we invaded Iraq because there's actually a Stargate there. That the exopolitics of the world, those people involved felt that when the Anunnaki may come back, because Nerubu is now approaching Earth again, they would come back through that Stargate and perhaps elevate Saddam Hussein into a position of power, and perhaps threaten.
Depending on who is in charge on Nibiru.
But if they're coming in there, then that's the first people.
Yeah, that's a good reason.
The first humans they get. And then so the theory in this book is that and there's quite a bit of evidence. It's not just theory, but the theory is that the Iraqi war was to secure the Stargate rather than to go after the oil.
Does she say that we did it?
Yeah, evidently we did.
Doesn't say where it is.
That's just it's an interesting idea.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah. And I'm going to have Stephen Greer on. He's scheduled for later, probably next month and the month after, for his book, which is also part of the Disclosure Project, of course, is all of, the hard evidence coming out of people involved in these projects. So, the Temple of Health, which is basically a health show, is now taking a turn into this. No, it really
well,
is.
I think it's
a very,
important.
Very important part of our history right now.
Absolutely, and I think more people need to be aware of what actually has been written and left for us to figure out.
Yeah,
and I'm delighted that the History Channel has started to pick up on it.
Right. I've been watching UFO Files and Ancient Aliens, and
the Ancient Aliens series.
Really enjoying the vast amount of history we have. It's not just a few people who have. They try to portray them as kind of kooks and that kind of thing. But these are military people. These are people who have. Come from the aerospace industry.
Right.
And the reason why it's important for the Temple of Health is not only does this extraterrestrial technology that's been under wraps by the military, it's probably a worldwide military-based organization that works primarily in secret, but it's really important because of the energy things that they've energy applications they may have to help with energy, and then the health applications with disease. I mean, you know, come on.
Well, one of the interesting things that struck me was when I read the 11th tablet of Gilgamesh, which was the first story ever produced by the Sumerians.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about the flood story, and
mm-hmm.
Noah and what he was supposed to do. And they say, which doesn't appear in the Bible in the story, that the collection of all the living species on the planet was done with DNA.
Yeah, it had to be.
Put it in a gold box.
You can't put all those animals.
No, no way. No. But the people who put the Bible together
right.
had to explain it in terms that people could understand in those days. They didn't know about DNA.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But now, also the story they tell us of how they created Adam through DNA insertion into what was then a process that we're doing ourselves now in fertilization mm-hmm. of females who can't get pregnant. It's
yeah.
the same process. And when we did the study on the human genome, which was, I think, 2000, 2001, they discovered there were 25,000 genes that make us up, basically. But they
mm-hmm.
found 223 alien genes in that mix.
Right.
I didn't know where they came from. There were no predecessors to them in the history of the genetic genome. And they attributed to viruses and things like that. But
mm-hmm.
if they read my book and other stories of how we were created, they would understand that we all have alien genes in us, and they are
right.
Anunnaki genes that came from this fertilization process that they performed.
And there was other information in these stories that the Anunnaki women actually had to incubate in their own uteruses.
Yes, that's exactly
human.
What happened. Was they took
didn't work to grow them in test tubes like they
no,
were
they,
trying
they
to.
Failed. They failed miserably in all the experiments that they did. And they finally took the egg from the Homo erectus, and they put
uh-huh.
their DNA in and fertilized it, and then implanted it in the womb of one of their birth mothers, Anunnaki
mm-hmm.
birth mothers, and that's how they produced Adam. And there's a cylinder seal that on page 64 of my book shows the moment of victory when they finally succeeded in doing that.
Yeah, and what they were saying about Adam, you know, that was the first human.
Yes, right.
So really, the story of Adam is true. It's just...
It's not God, with
a big G, God with a little G.
Yeah, but there is a reference, you know, Dr. Susan, in the Genesis 6.
Uh-huh.
I'll quote it to you. It says, "The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God went to the daughters of men and had children by them."
Right.
"They were the heroes of old, the men of renown."
Mm-hmm.
So this word Nephilim, which appears in the Bible, I think, is a direct reference to the Anunnaki.
Right. That it probably is. And then there's another story that connects that to the flood, that the this mixed race, you know, when the sons of God found the daughters of men fair and had children with them, this race of the mixture felt that they should have the same rights and privileges that the gods did.
Yes, exactly.
And so when there was, I guess the Anunnaki could predict that there was going to be a giant flood because of the asteroids. I think there were 7 asteroids that hit Earth to create the flood, and all of them hit in water because Earth
yeah.
is primarily
water. You
know what
I was reminded of today when you read about the Australian tsunami floods?
Right.
And the mud that was left.
Yeah,
people should ask themselves, after a flood situation like that, the people of Australia are really in a hard place to get back together and get going.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine what primitive people would have been like if the earth was covered with 5 feet of mud?
Right. Well, I think probably because I think the story of the Great Flood is that it probably flooded everything. I mean,
yeah.
it was a worldwide flood. It was probably the most significant flood in Earth's history.
Yes.
And there's plenty of evidence that the only people that survived were given information by the extraterrestrials and enough time, you know, enough time to prepare.
Yes.
And they probably it may be that nobody else survived the flood other than the people that were given the information.
Dr. Susan, after they survived the flood, they needed help to survive from there forward because
right.
food and to have animals and to have any chance at survival of a species, they needed outside help.
Right, exactly.
And in the story in the 11th tablet of Gilgamesh, by the way, I've produced a CD which people can find on my webpage, which is www.adamthemissinglink.com. Besides the book, the CD tells the story of Gilgamesh, which I mm-hmm. think is significant because it contains a lot of the information that they wanted to transfer to us in the future. They knew we wouldn't understand it in the beginning, but now, as we look back at it, I understand what they were talking about because we have the technology to comprehend
right.
what it means.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
So I made this little CD, which is about a 17-minute mm-hmm. video, which I think people might find interesting.
Oh, yeah. That's fascinating. So essentially, then, the gods helped the people that were able to survive.
That's right. That's right.
And we have evidence. This I learned this from God's Jesus and Consciousness, that there's a lot of evidence that these civilizations that then were able to survive started at the tops of mountains
mm-hmm.
and then went down. You know,
yeah, they found a wheat that had been generated.
Right.
It was at 9,000 feet.
Right. So you know, the evidence now that we have is that the Great Flood probably did happen. I mean, you know, the scientific evidence.
Well, I think that's been proven. And what they said in the tablets was they knew that the next passage, this was one of the 3,600-year passages of Nibiru,
mm-hmm.
was going to cause the Antarctic ice shelf to dislodge
mm-hmm.
and
right.
plunge into the South Atlantic Ocean and cause a 1,000-foot-high tsunami, which would sweep northward and cover the Earth.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing I also discovered was that an ark floating on top would be terribly destroyed. So there's a picture in an Egyptian temple of what the ark looked like, and it was a submarine with a snorkel
right.
on it.
Yeah. There's actually a lot of evidence that the ark was a submarine.
Yeah.
That's very, very true. And also logically. I mean, logically it would have to be able
yes,
to survive.
Right.
And I think, wasn't it the movie 2012, you know, all the
yes.
vessels that were, the survival vessels were also designed that way.
Yeah, well, the flood in the Bible, of course, is 40 days of rain.
Mm-hmm.
And that, interestingly, if you look at the Australian thing, all the rain that they had that they never had before in Brisbane has caused tsunami floods from the rivers,
mm-hmm.
which produced the same kind of end result, which was everything covered with mud.
Right.
Which is exactly what they described in the... that's why the story of Gilgamesh, I think, is so significant for us to understand, because it not only has these this 11th tablet, which describes the events of the flood and the secret meeting and so forth of the gods, that they wanted everybody to die. They didn't want any survivors.
Right, because of the clamor that these half-gods were creating on Earth.
Yeah, well, they were diluting their bloodline. In other
right.
words, the intermarriage between the Anunnaki or the
right.
extraterrestrials and the humans was causing what they felt was impurities, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they did create some giants, which we got to read about in Homer's Ulysses.
Mm-hmm. Also like David and Goliath.
David and Goliath in the Bible, yeah. and Achilles and Hector and Atlas and all those characters were the product of this intermarriage.
And they also created very long lifespans in some half-breed
right. okay.
humans.
Now, the whole theme of Gilgamesh is
mm-hmm.
immortality. In other words, his birth mm-hmm. record was that his mother was an extraterrestrial and his father
right.
was human.
Right.
And he finally comes to the realization that they live forever, according to what they say, and why shouldn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Because his quest was to seek immortality.
Right.
How did he do it? And that whole story is fascinating because it reveals the technology of the extraterrestrials in the book, in this story there,
mm-hmm.
revealing to us how they did things, how they flew back and forth, how they built things, et cetera.
Yeah, and it wasn't that they just flew like a ship would fly, you know. They have you know, the ability to.
Well, they're celestial rockets, is what they were. They were actually spaceships like we have created in our civilization today, maybe much more advanced than ours. But the principle of physics, you can't get around. It takes so much energy to get off of a planet and get up into space and go to another planet. And how that's all done is we're still trying to decipher.
Well, that's where stargates come in.
Yeah, exactly.
Stargates are wormholes from, say, here to there, and it may be, you know, 11 million light years or whatever, or even, it doesn't matter how many light years, but you can bend time-space with the use of stargates.
Right,
I mean, that's
and also, apparently they had the ability to communicate great distances in space, because when they got, for instance, they were contemplating creating us, and that was a no-no. You weren't supposed to fool around with the species. So they went to the home. They talked to the folks back in Nibiru, their home planet, and asked for permission to do it. And they were denied.
Right.
Their council of elders got together and said, no, you can't do that. Well, they were shipping gold back to the home planet to close a leak in their atmosphere, like an ozone hole.
Right.
And the gold was coming from the Earth. And
from South Africa.
Africa, yeah. If you want more gold, we're going to have to get some workers because our guys don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah. They rebelled.
That was the story of the mutiny, yeah, right. I'm not sure that's a true story, but anyway.
Yeah.
That's, you know, the victors get to write the history of what.
Right.
And
that's,
I think,
true.
You know, there's a story going around that white powder gold gives you longevity. And since they may have ran out of gold on their planet, they were raping ours.
So basically, the humans, Adam, and the progenitors after that, because after that they actually were able to get the humans to mate and produce
there's
children.
Yeah, there's a story in the Bible that coincides with the cuneiform tablets tell about how they got tired of producing them with their birth mothers.
Right, yeah.
So they wanted them to, but they're like, you know, when you cross a horse and a donkey, or a horse and a mule, you get a donkey.
Right.
Or a horse and a donkey, and you get a mule. I think
it's a horse and a donkey. You get
horse
a
and donkey, you get a mule. But the mule can't reproduce itself.
Exactly.
Because it's sterile. So what they did, they performed an Adam's rib operation, where they took some of the bone marrow or whatever out of the one and put it in Eve and made her fertile.
Is that where the rib comes in?
Yeah, that's the story in the Bible.
Interesting.
Adam's rib. Yeah, it's a fascinating connection of how they were able to take these clones and get them to reproduce themselves.
But the problem is they reproduce too well.
That's right. That's right.
Like rabbits.
There are generations of Homo sapiens, and then came another upgrade called Homo sapiens sapiens.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a story in the cuneiform tablets about a direct mating of one of the gods. His name was Enki. He was one of the super leaders. He was their scientific expert.
Right.
And he created two humans from female females. And this species, which then had the direct DNA from one of the extraterrestrials into a human female, produced another generation of Homo sapiens, which were much more intelligent than the original ones.
Right.
And they were called Homo sapiens sapiens. And one of them was taken back up to Nibiru, their home planet, to show to the king what they were capable of doing. And this is a story in the Bible, I think, of Ezekiel.
Right, yeah.
And he went, you know, and he went in this flourishing wheels to within wheels thing.
Right, he rose up into the heavens.
Up to the heavens,
Yeah, I think that's true, yeah. And so basically, there were two brothers on Earth of the king.
Enki and Enlil.
Right, and they started to fight.
Yes, right. They were,
as brothers do.
Well,
for power.
It's an interesting story if you get into the innards of it. Enki was born first, but he wasn't born from the queen as the mother. He was born from a concubine. Therefore, his bloodline was not directly. His inheritance wasn't direct because he wasn't born from the king's wife, who was, by the way, his sister.
Well, then that's probably just as well.
Well, no, in those days, the reason they lived so long, I think, this is my own supposition, is that they were able to clean up their genome. And they get rid of all the things that would kill us, you know. They
right.
And therefore, their bloodline, as pure as it was, you could intermix and it wouldn't make any difference.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. And the secondborn, which was Enlil, came from the queen mother and the king. And therefore, his inheritance was direct, even though the firstborn son wasn't. So if you look in the Bible, it's an interesting story about Abraham. Abraham had a son with Sarah, his wife's handmaiden, and that was where Ishmael came from.
Mm-hmm.
Ishmael was Abraham's firstborn son by Hagar. Hagar was the name of with permission from God, by the way, to do that. And then later came Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Isaac was a product of Abraham and Sarah.
Right.
Pure. Oh, by the way, Sarah was Abraham's sister.
Oh, my. Okay.
So the
incest
Quran,
of the Bible,
the Quran bases its legitimacy on Ishmael, because he was firstborn of Abraham.
Right.
And the history of religions traced back through, all three great religions traced back through Abraham.
Mm-hmm. So basically when the brothers started to fight, they used evidently some nuclear weapons that they weren't supposed to use. I've interviewed Greg Braden, who I think brought this to the world, that there is evidence of a nuclear warhead going off.
Well, you read the Bible, Sodom and Gomorrah.
Right.
You read correctly the aftermath of Sodom and Gomorrah, and read Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you see the same evidence of what happened.
Now, why did Lot's wife turn into a pillar of salt when she looked at it?
She looked at it. They weren't supposed to look. You're supposed to turn away and go.
Yeah. It was it because she got hit with the radiation?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That was, there were several things that happened after every atomic explosion. First is the shock wave, then is the radiation wave. And then the final thing, which was why Linus Pauling got his first Nobel Prize, was the fallout. Radiation fallout is deadly.
Mm-hmm.
And it they called it the evil wind.
Right.
And from the desert where they created this war in 2029 B.C., it wafted northwest and wiped out Sumer. The Sumerian civilization was completely devastated by this evil wind, which was the radiation fallout. And Pauling realized that we were testing our weapons in the atmosphere and dropping these stuff all over the world.
Causing cancer.
Yeah, it destroyed our civilization as we know it. He went around single-handedly to every government that had a bomb was doing it and told them, you got to test underground.
Right.
And they all had a treaty, and they agreed to do their testing underground. He saved us.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Pauling is the only...
Very bright.
Only human being who's received two Nobel Prizes singly by himself. The other one was in chemistry.
Right, right.
But this was an act of a hero who... They called him all kinds of stuff when he was trying to stop the testing in the atmosphere. They thought he was a communist. But he was trying to save us, humanity, and he did. And I'm privileged to say that I was his student.
That's wonderful.
I knew him personally.
So basically when this happened, they had violated a rule, which is you can't do that. And, we see evidence of that from the non-interference policies in Star Trek, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But destroying a planet... And its life forms is not allowed. I mean,
no, and apparently they had atomic wars back on Nibiru.
Pretty devastating, right?
Yeah, and they said, after they made this mistake, it's an interesting thing. I reproduced the translation of the last tablet on that story in my book. And the one brother, Enlil, is saying to the other brother, Enki, we did what we did, and you did what you did, and boy, what a mess we made.
Right.
And will this repeat itself? Will what happened on Nibiru be repeated here on Earth? And I think it's kind of a warning to us.
Right. Don't do that.
Don't do this.
That's right. Nobody wins.
Nobody wins, right.
And so basically they get called back because of this transgression. And the gods leave. I mean, the problem is when the gods leave...
We're left to our devices.
Right. So the priest class is elected to communicate with the gods, but of course they're probably not communicating with the gods know, because the gods have left.
That's right.
They might for a little while, but...
You know, one of the things that struck me, Dr. Susan, is that if we got their genetic code, there were two things in my research that they did just forever and always. They were oversexed, mm-hmm. and they made wars amongst themselves. And
right.
Look at us as their product, their children.
Well, we're doing the same thing.
We do the same damn thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know,
exactly.
We inherited all this.
Yeah. Well, I also think that some different genetics are being inserted. I don't think it stopped with the Anunnaki. I think people like Linus Pauling
mm-hmm.
and people who have great humanity and come to Mother Teresa, you know, you can go
right.
on and name all the greats that have come to change and be an example for others.
From ourselves.
I believe they have alien DNA that is of, you know, a higher order than the
yeah,
Anunnaki.
They're the Homo sapiens sapiens sapiens.
Exactly. So I think that, you know, that there's genetic engineering goes on based on, well, what Dr. Greer is talking about and some of these other books talk about. There's groups of aliens that are more watchers and influencing at certain kind of non-interference, but still bringing in humanoid beings to help, like what Dr. Pauling did.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
I mean, I
agree.
It's critical. It's absolutely critical, and often they work without a great deal of, you know, help or
recognition.
Organization or recognition, but they have a mission. Their mission is internal.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from the inner planes, not some
right.
outside source. And
I've come to the realization that, you know, even though I'm reporting in the book the history of the Anunnaki, the first alien
mm-hmm.
extraterrestrials that came to our planet, they weren't the only ones.
No.
You know, this happens to be the most voluminous record of such a visitation.
Right. And your book is about Adam, so
yeah.
Adam is directly related to them.
But I think planet Earth is so attractive, it's like a 7-Eleven. Everybody drops in on us.
Right.
'Cause
well, and it is. It's a beautiful, beautiful
you know,
planet compared to other planets.
When we get out there and start getting away from our solar system into the universe, we're going to find hundreds of planets that have life forms on them.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do visit them, we might repeat the history. You know, just we're going to go down there and take a look because it's interesting.
Right.
It's human,
right.
human forms, anyway. We don't know exactly what they are yet, but we'll find out.
Yeah.
So I agree with you, and I agree with most of the people who have written about the other influences on our planet and on our civilization, our species, by other extraterrestrials in other forms.
Yeah, and not all extraterrestrials are third dimensional.
Right.
That's the other thing to really understand. And I think that there's a huge amount of evidence out there that that many of the more benevolent extraterrestrials are actually fifth and sixth dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And that the war of that we call Armageddon, which may be being fought now or may be fought in the near future, is actually a fourth dimensional, maybe with third dimensional, you know, intrusion, so to speak.
The more I study and the older I get, the more I realize I don't know everything.
Exactly. Well, you know, when all of the major world's religions are predicting certain things, you have to, you know, pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is kind of a conflict going on between two major forces
mm-hmm.
On planet Earth at this time. One is the more secretive, militaristic, and probably very heavily influenced by E.T. You know, I never told you this, but I was a major in the Air Force at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
What years?
From, let's see, 84 to 88.
Wow.
And I met people there who had seen the live beings from
uh-huh.
Roswell. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And now, you know, they could have been lying to me, but as I say to people, I don't think they had any reason to lie to me.
Well, I've been invited to the Aztec UFO conference in March in New Mexico,
Right.
And they had a, I'm a speaker there with four other gentlemen, and they had a visitation also, which they have proof of, and I'm going to investigate that when I get there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's amazing how much we don't know. You know, in your field, you're learning things every minute, and holistic medicine is something that nobody would have thought about except the primitive civilization.
Yeah, right. All the...
Who did it because that's what they did.
That's right.
But we're now learning, and the I have a little phrase that was, I think it's something that John Gardner maybe said. Life has many chapters. Learn all of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that because we're just cracking into what there is to know.
Yeah, your point that we really need to understand that we don't know all that there is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a group that meets every Sunday, and in that, you know, in the meditative state, especially with a group, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there may be those amongst us who are good meditators, but, you know, you get distracted easily. So meditating with a group is very, very good. And in that, I've learned so much about what is beyond the third dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, predictions and information coming in that then was true, you know, I mean, the predictions of all the swine flu thing and the bird flu vaccine
right.
being put in the vaccine. But most of us are medical, so this is before the swine flu, we ask if we should all go get the bird flu vaccine when it came out, because, you know, it looked at that time like the bird flu had a 80% or 90% mortality rate. And the answer was not necessarily, because the bird flu is sometimes in the vaccine. And then two
right.
weeks later, Baxter got caught doing that. I mean, imagine that, you know. So,
yeah, right.
So
what is the medical phrase that comes to my mind, but I can't put it in words right now? Is it the do no harm?
Yeah, first do no harm, the Hippocratic Oath.
Hippocratic Oath, that's it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So, but the point is that especially if one will express an interest in communicating with higher dimensional helpers, watchers, whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the past, I think they were called angels and spirits and, you know, I mean, I think religion has names for them and science has names for them that are, then it's the same thing. It's just different
yes.
names.
Yes.
But in any case, if especially in a group, if one expresses the interest in helping and cooperating with these higher dimensional entities, a great deal of protection can occur. A great deal of protection.
Yes.
And the world right now is kind of a dangerous place. It was more dangerous
than... Tell me about it.
Yeah, it's a little more dangerous than it was before, and some of the things that we don't know about, like, you know, genetically modified food, nanotechnology, what's in our personal care products, in our cosmetics if you're
mm-hmm.
female,
mm-hmm.
You know, what's in our food supply, the safety of our food supply. I interviewed an author last week on the safety of our food supply.
There's a lot of genetic engineering going on.
Oh, incredible amount. And there's new diseases coming up, and our clinic is kind of a mecca for these new diseases. We showed the CDC their first case of Morgellons disease. So, you know, putting all of this together, really what I think we need to tell people is you need to do your own investigation. Do not rely on government regulatory agencies.
No.
Do not rely on what the mainstream media tells you.
No.
And also cellular telephones and EM radiation.
Right.
You know, we're as dumb as they were when they were exploding nuclear weapons in the upper air.
Yes.
I mean, we really are.
Really, really. I agree with you.
We just have to realize that we need this higher dimensional wisdom, so to speak, to help protect mm-hmm. us.
Well, my goal with what's left of my life is to get this story that I put it in a kind of a Life magazine formatted.
Right, I love it.
With about 145 pictures.
You got all these great pictures.
Yeah, so people can grasp the concept. You try to reach
it. It's very easy.
And you're going to have a difficult time conceptually understanding what he's talking about. But this way, I've gotten it out in a paperback form, And now my goal is get it into a movie.
Really? Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, I've written with my wife the first film of a trilogy, which will tell this story in a fashion that will alert people to what we ought to be doing and what we shouldn't be doing.
Right.
Now, history repeats itself, and those who are unable to understand history are doomed to repeat it.
Mm-hmm. They are.
So my goal is to try to not be as successful as Linus Pauling was in saving us, but through knowledge and information transfer through the film. I think film is the major media right now.
It is. It is.
People. I'm so proud of the History Channel for starting it with their television series, Ancient Aliens.
Oh, it's wonderful.
The first story is called Gilgamesh 10, and it kind of weaves the actual text that came to us through the Sumerians, the 12 tablets. And then, at the end, produces the evidence that makes it kind of hard to dismiss that this could happen again, and what happened 6,000 years ago in the deserts of the Sinai, if we repeat that, we're going to destroy ourselves.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's been a lot of anti-war movies produced for various reasons on various subjects, I think many that were successful, but the subject just kind of fades away after we forget about it. We keep creating.
Well, I think the powers that be know that their greatest threat is from an inward consciousness aspect. As each human kind of goes through, because of the energetic changes occurring at this time, because of the galactic alignments, we all have the opportunity to have our own internal wake-up call, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And if enough of the humans on the planet wake up, that is the biggest threat that the powers that be have to their current, stranglehold on the planet through political, military,
fear.
And energetic and energy domination.
Mm-hmm.
And In your book, you have all the evidence. You have what's on the tablets. You have the cylinder seals. You have the statues of old. You know, the Egyptian, Ishtar statue.
Ishtar, I love that statue.
And then the pyramids. You know, the pyramids and all of the structures, Easter Island and the Stonehenge. You've tied it all together into
Thing. Collectively make their own decisions, see if they connect the dots.
Right, connect the dots. That's what David Icke always says. I'm just connecting the dots.
That's right. And I think it's, I'm not really pushing anything. I'm just trying to expose it so that people with the ability to look and read a little bit can comprehend what we're facing into. And, of course, with the other disciplines that are contributing to it by the other forces, this is the first written record, and the cylinder seals are a picture record.
Right,
of
it's beautiful.
Contact between extraterrestrial civilization and humans.
Right.
And I mean, we're spending billions of dollars listening, you know, all these telescopes, trying to make contact when it's already happened.
Yeah, I mean, we make contact every Sunday.
Right.
You know?
So,
I mean, you might want to call them angels rather than extraterrestrials, but there's a question of whether those two might not be the same thing as on Ancient Aliens. There's a whole show on that particular question.
Yes, exactly.
So I think there's only one reality. I mean, and the reality that exists outside of the third dimension and encompasses the third dimension, but that there is, it's one great creation, and with God as the creator. But if you limit what you understand to the third dimension, it's very confusing.
Yeah, well,
it doesn't make sense.
I'm able to, in the book, show that they talked about their deity. In other words, the extraterrestrials had a deity, and they called it the creator of all.
Right, and that's exactly.
Whenever they got a message from the creator of all, they obeyed it.
Yeah, which is good. Which is very good. So would you like to give your website again?
Yes, I would.
Please do.
a web page you can reach by going www. and the title of the book, AdamTheMissingLink.com. Just plug that into your computer, and you'll come to my webpage. And on the webpage, it tells the history of my writing the book. And it gives you three options. You could purchase an ebook, you can purchase the hardcover book, mm-hmm. or the CD.
Right. Well, I love the book. It was all the color pictures, bringing everything together that I've been reading about.
Thank you. It took me 10 years to put that together.
Right. Well, there's a lot of research in it.
Yes.
There really is.
And I'm still finding things out that I may write a supplement to it.
Great. Yeah, I just finished a book, and you're right. Right after you finish it, all this other information comes in that should have been in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate speaking with you.
Well, my pleasure, Dr. Susan. I appreciate your doing your show and helping to spread the word. Because
trying to wake everybody up.
Right.
Wake up.
And, as a surgeon in your own right and the things that you do in your normal following, to do this in addition to that is really remarkable, and I congratulate you.
Oh, thank you. Well, actually, I'm a spiritual healer disguised as a plastic surgeon.
Oh.
I was a spiritual healer well before being a plastic surgeon.
Yeah, well, my daughter...
I was guided through spiritual healing to be a plastic surgeon, actually. So,
my daughter is in New Mexico in Santa Fe, and she's a hypnotherapist.
Uh-huh.
And she has a circle of friends that are all spiritual healers. And it's marvelous when I go there to get in that environment and feel
mm-hmm.
the energy.
It's great, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It really is. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
Well, thank you. Next week we have director David Burton, who is a nurse, of all things, and the director of a great DVD called Ingredients with GREED in the middle of ingredients. It's all about how you need to watch your food supply, especially in regards to trans fats. And then on the 29th, we have Jill Mara, who has a book, Keys to Soul Evolution, A Gateway to the Next Dimension, a little bit about what we were talking about earlier today. And on the third Thursday of every month, we have Noetic Science group meeting on the 20th of January at the Dunwoody location, where we will be learning about applied remote viewing from Lake Culver he will be talking about how we can all learn perception at a distance, shielding, how remote viewing is not limited to any particular time. You can go into the past or into the future. And he is a previous Board of Directors member for the American Association of Remote Viewers, the International Society for UFO Research, as well as a member of the Russian Psi Research Organization based in Moscow. He has a lot of information about Russia. I actually met some of the Russian remote viewers at a TREAT conference here in Atlanta in the 1990s, and they were excellent at what they did. So join us for Noetic Science if you're in Atlanta, and if not, we'll be back next week with Ingredients. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.